GreenSense is brought to you by JLT Specialty USA, the world's largest energy insurance broker, serving the entire energy continuum. Visit JLTUS.com.
Welcome to GreenSense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Hello, that's me. I'm an environmental entrepreneur who comes up with market-based solutions to our environmental challenges, and I also serve as host of GreenSense.
I'm Bob Kessler, serving as your executive producer.
Each week, we search for people that are changing the world and making it a better place to live through their sustainable ideas and innovations.
They got to make common sense. They got to make economic sense. That's how they get here on GreenSense.
And they have to solve some environmental challenge. So, Bob, who do we have this week who's going to inspire us to change?
We're going to look into plastic that's biodegradable. Obviously, the Pacific garbage patch, a huge problem. But if the plastic were biodegradable, wouldn't be. Volvo has something called the Super Truck. They just came out with some really impressive mileage numbers on that, but a lot of other things. It saves a lot of fuel. And who's tired of the election? Okay, everybody. Dr. Richard Swart's going to look into how that has been affecting the world of crowdfunding.
All coming up on this week's edition of GreenSense. When you listen to our show, you get to live vicariously through the GreenSense Farms equity crowdfunding effort. And periodically, we check in with our friend, a global thought leader on crowdfunding, Dr. Richard Swart. And crowdfunding is all about these recent SEC changes that now allow accredited and non-accredited investors to own equity in startup companies. And many sustainable businesses are looking to equity crowdfunding to finance their green dream. And now, everyday people have a chance to get in on the ground floor of startup companies without paying broker fees or going through Wall Street. So that's why we're covering this, and we're going to kick off GreenSense with Dr. Swart. Richard, welcome back to GreenSense.
Yeah, happy to be here, Robert. Thank you.
Well, it's hard to talk about the capital markets without talking about the election. The election's coming up very shortly here. What is your observations about the effect of the election on the general capital markets, and then more specifically, is that impacting this equity crowdfunding?
In general, Robert, things are slowing down, and this is very common right before any election that everyone is trying to either get their IPOs in as fast as possible or consummate a transaction as fast as possible, but they don't want to have a transaction tied up in a period of dramatic uncertainty or turbulence. So I think we're seeing a slowing down of plans. If people are ready to launch, they're launching. But if they're not literally ready to hit the button in the next couple of days, people are going to wait probably until January to do much.
And why do investors who are putting small amounts of capital in this equity crowdfunding, why are they even worried about the elections?
Well, I was referring to the capital markets more broadly. In terms of equity crowdfunding, I think what we're going to see based on historical data from other years is a slowdown around the holidays. It's just a really difficult time to capture people's attention. And given the fact that most equity crowdfunding campaigns last 30, 45, 60 days, launching your campaign to coincide with the holiday season is a hard time to capture the hearts and minds of potential investors.
Does the public understand equity crowdfunding, the idea that you want a large amount of people to put a small amount of investment into these startup companies, or is there a learning curve with the public about what this all means?
We are absolutely in the very beginning of a learning curve. We don't have a Shark Tank of crowdfunding. We don't have CNBC or other shows talking about it. It's a relatively new innovation in capital markets, and most innovations in capital markets take a number of years before they catch on, and this is going to take several years as well. A lot of people know about Kickstarter, but very few people know that you can use Kickstarter-like mechanisms with a lot of regulation and compliance layered on to actually raise money for your new company.
Last time we spoke, you mentioned that the UK is about 6 years ahead of us with equity crowdfunding. You also shared some facts and figures. Do you have any updates to share with us?
Well, a recent report came out that the largest crowdfunding site in the UK analyzed every company that had raised money on their platform, and it was over 430. These are, you know, large, several hundred thousand million dollar raises. And of those companies, less than 20 have gone out of business, and that's over a seven-year period of time. So that's about a 90-95% survival rate, which is absolutely phenomenal news because most startups and early-stage companies are far less than that. So it appears that companies that are successful at crowdfunding are doing a really good job of leveraging those investors and leveraging that capital to build sustainable and long-term businesses.
Do you have any facts and figures on how that compares to the traditional equity markets?
In America, 70% of all startups are dead within 5 years.
It sounded good. I just wanted to check with the expert. Are you seeing any other trends out there?
We are seeing more companies looking at Regulation A plus that are substantial, ongoing companies. I can't release a name, but there's actually a furniture manufacturer over $100 million a year of revenue that is about to launch a Reg A crowdfunding campaign. And we also had a really interesting event happen where NBC with Comcast, NBC Sports, just acquired a crowdfunding platform called Rally Me, which is crowdfunding for athletes. So we have our first Fortune 50 company buying a crowdfunding platform, which just portends good for the industry.
What is the biggest obstacle for companies doing an equity crowdfunding campaign?
Depends on the flavor, but the shortest answer is marketing, marketing, marketing. Really understanding how to speak to your audience, really galvanizing interest. Even though this is a change in regulation, companies need to understand that they still have to bring the investors, they still need to bring the excitement. And it's a sophisticated, several week long multi-channel marketing campaign that has one of the results of investments and two of the results, increased interest in your company.
That's Dr. Richard Swart, a global thought leader in crowdfunding. I'm Robert Colangelo, and this is GreenSense.
GreenSense Farms, the largest network of commercial indoor vertical farms in the world, wants you to join in our green dream. You can now own a piece of the farm with our limited time equity offering. You'll be promoting sustainable farming by investing in our transformative growing technology. Visit our Start Engine campaign at greensensefarms.com.
Plastic is a huge environmental problem. The Great Pacific Garbage Patch is a prime example of what can happen when a cheap feedstock becomes ubiquitous and has properties that allow it to degrade over hundreds of years. Mike Ricciardi is CEO of Smart Plastic Technologies and has invented a possible solution that will allow us to select the biodegradability of your plastic. So we're really excited to hear about it. Mike, welcome to GreenSense.
Thank you, Robert.
So why does plastic take so long to biodegrade?
Well, basically, the molecular chains of plastic are long and complicated, and it takes the natural environment a very long time to break that down so that bacteria can consume it.
What makes some plastics biodegradable?
Well, if a plastic has an additive in it, like my product, then the molecular chains are broken down very, very quickly, and it allows the natural process to take place much faster.
So how does your plastic additive help plastic biodegrade, and what does it turn into?
Well, basically, my additive, when it's released into the plastic, breaks down those molecular chains and makes them small enough so that bacteria can consume them. And functionally, that's exactly what happens with paper, and that's how paper degrades. It's just that the molecular chains of paper are small enough from the beginning so that the bacteria can get in there. So when bacteria consumes carbon atoms, basically what is released is water, carbon dioxide, and biomass, which is basically dirt.
So explain how you can adjust the time that it takes for your plastic to biodegrade.
Well, what we do is we put in our additive, and our additive has a package of stabilizers that control when the additive is released and begins this process. So we can make the plastic perfectly functional anywhere in a 1 to 6 year window at the request of the customer. Then the biodegradation process takes over in the natural environment, driven by oxygen, and then it's a process of the access to organic material to eat the molecules and make the plastic break down, which takes somewhere for in a time frame of 6 to 18 months. But there again, this is exactly how paper breaks down.
Michael, this is fascinating. So explain why you would want to control the degradation rate of plastic, and what's the benefit?
Well, right now, plastic degrades very, very slowly. So plastic in the open environment could sit for 100 years. So the scary part about this is that all of the plastic thrown into a field or a river that has been dumped out there in our lifetimes is still sitting there. So if you have my additive in the plastic, once the additive is released, it will break down in that 6 to 18 month window, just like it were paper. So we're taking 99% of that time frame away and causing the plastic to break down much more quickly.
But what is the benefit to adjusting the time frame? Why would someone want plastic to degrade over a longer period of time, and why would someone want to do it in a shorter period of time?
Well, when I was referring to that time frame, what I meant was how long does the plastic normal? Because, you know, you need some plastic things like, you know, laundry detergent bottles to last longer before they start to break down, but things like shopper bags, you want them to start to break down much more quickly. Once the degradation process starts, then it's all a function of access to bacteria, and it's sped up by ultraviolet light, you know, exposure to sunlight and heat and that kind of stress.
What about plastic that ends up in a landfill where it is not exposed to light and some of these other parameters you mentioned?
Well, it will not break down in a landfill, but the thing to understand about landfills, because there's no oxygen, nothing breaks down in a landfill. And landfills are typically misunderstood. People think that there's this process going on in a landfill where everything breaks down. The reality is hot dogs don't break down in a landfill. Newspapers don't break down in a landfill because of the lack of oxygen. So plastic with my additive in it won't break down. It will just act like normal plastic. But the reality is nothing is breaking down in a landfill. So really nothing changes.
This is Green Sense. My guest is Mike Ricciardi. He's CEO of Smart Plastic Technologies, and we're talking about his additive that will make plastics more biodegradable. I'm Robert Colangelo. Mike, explain the cost benefit of this biodegradable additive. You know, it sounds great, sounds a little black box, but I'm sure everything is driven by business, by costs, and a lot of these things are on a penny's decision. So talk a little bit about the economics.
Well, the nice thing about our additive is that it's a good value. It really doesn't cost very much. Since our additive only has to be put in at a very, very low rate, 1%, we only add about 3 to 5% cost to the plastic. So a shopper bag that costs a penny, when you put our additive in it, it will cost 1.03 pennies. So when you look at this relative to other environmental opportunities, it's actually very cost effective.
So plastic's been around a long time. Why did it take so long to come up with something that's biodegradable?
Well, that's a good question. The reality is we've known how to biodegrade plastic for a while now, like 30 years. The challenge is controlling the degradation so that the plastic is functionally normal for the right period of time and starts to degrade when you want it. We've had problems in the past with just not having the right science to be able to control this functionality. But we have the formula that allows the plastic to degrade when you want it to degrade, but be normal when you want it to be normal. And that's really the artistry here.
Well, you're a pretty smart guy. You went to Harvard and Northwestern. How'd you come up with this idea?
Well, actually, I found a couple of business partners that were very smart about this. And we have one partner with us that is the inventor of the formulations. And he is world renowned and has done this his whole life. And when I talked to him about getting involved, I asked him, why is this different? And he said that he figured out how to control the degradation, which is what makes this functional and cost-effective.
Well, you know the old joke, the pioneers get the aerials, the settlers get the land. So tell us about when we're going to start seeing this technology in the market.
Well, we have already received some orders from some big grocery retailers. So you're going to start to see biodegradable carrier bags used at checkout at grocery retail very soon. And as I indicated, once some of them start, the rest will follow very quickly. So I think you're going to start to see more and more of this. But it's in common use in other parts of the world, in Mexico, in South America, in Europe, in Africa, et cetera. We're just catching up to everyone else.
Bottom line, why is this good for the environment?
It's good for the environment because it eliminates plastic litter, which is a big problem.
We wish you the best of luck of taking that idea and turning that green dream into reality.
Thank you, Robert.
That's Mike Ricciardi, CEO of Smart Plastic Technologies, telling us about biodegradable plastics. This is Robert Colangelo, and you're listening to GreenSense.
GreenSense is sponsored by JLT Specialty USA, experienced professionals ensuring energy, technology, and aerospace, serving complex risk with creative solutions. Visit usa.jlt.com.
The super truck is a new kind of long-haul tractor trailer that uses many new technologies to save fuel, from building materials to aerodynamic design to its efficient engine. It's a public-private partnership involving the U.S. Department of Energy, Volvo, and several other companies working in cooperation. Joining us to tell us more about the super truck is Pascal Amar, Volvo Group Senior Project Manager. Pascal, thanks for joining us on GreenSense.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, tell us about some of the technologies that make this super truck more fuel efficient.
Well, there's a very long list of technologies, but I think some of the highlights here, we have a very aggressive improvement on the aerodynamic performance of this truck. So we've done a lot of work on the truck itself, the tractor and the trailer. We also have a completely redesigned engine that has a lot of improvements to the combustion, reduced internal friction. We have new tires that are more efficient, less rolling resistance than current tires. We have a lighter truck, a lot of lightweight components. So the list goes on and on. So it was a kind of a bumper to bumper project where we really tried to improve every part of the truck.
You don't hear a lot of talk about tires, and yet we have millions of tires on the road. Talk a little bit more about the tires and how you were able to improve fuel efficiency through better tire technology.
And that's one of the areas where we did not actually go too deep, because safety is, of course, a concern as soon as you start touching tires. So we didn't want to go too aggressive on prototyping there. We just used the latest and greatest that we could get for every tire. The trailer tires, the front steer tires, the drive tires are all different, of course, but they're each the best in that category. And I think over the course of the Supertruck project, which is about 5 years, we saw an improvement of about 1% per year on the tires, just from the suppliers doing their thing on, and improving their technologies.
Which were the most challenging technologies to come up with, and which ones brought some of the most surprising innovations?
I think some of the more challenging were on the powertrain side. We worked a lot on developing a waste heat recovery system that helps us get a little bit more efficiency out of the engine. That was definitely one of the more challenging. It's something that we are evaluating for the future to see how or if we could make this robust enough for to hand over to our customers at some point. On the truck side, I think one of the bigger challenges was to try to design aerodynamic solutions that are practical for the driver. So, I mean, we all know the shape of a bullet is about as aerodynamic as it gets, but the truck that looks like a bullet is not very practical. So trying to find that trade-off between aerodynamic performance and everyday practical use. To me, one of the more surprising things that we stumbled upon was on the chassis frame, we challenged our supplier to come up with a lightweight solution. And they over-delivered. They gave us a chassis frame that is 1,000 pounds lighter than the current frame, which is roughly half of the weight of the current frame. And we've been putting that frame through its paces, and it's so far performing as well as the current product, if not better.
Autonomous cars are coming, and one of the first areas where you may see autonomous vehicles is in trucking, because it's one of the hardest jobs to fill is an over-the-road truck driver. Did you ever consider the autonomous operation of this vehicle?
We did not, because the focus of the project was clearly efficiency, fuel savings. So autonomous driving, the area that we touched upon was platooning. We wanted to investigate how much we might be able to save if we were to deploy a type of truck like Super Truck into a platooning configuration. So we saw some benefits there, but we did not explore autonomous driving or platooning much further than this.
If you just joined us, I'm Robert Colangelo, and this is GreenSense. My guest is Pascal Amar, Volvo Group Senior Project Manager, and we're talking about their new Super Truck. Pascal, tell me at the bottom line, what kind of energy savings did you see?
We achieved a freight efficiency improvement of 88%.
Whoa, that means that's impressive.
It is, and we're pretty pleased about this. We were impressed to see how far we got. Actually, the goal of the program was a 50% improvement in freight efficiency, so being measured in ton miles per gallon. We achieved 88%, and we actually think there's still some out there that we could achieve as well.
So break that down and tell us what 88% means.
88%, it means our super truck can carry 88% more freight than our baseline truck with the same amount of fuel over the same distance. So it's a payload measured in ton multiplied by the miles per gallon that the truck gets. So it means we were able to increase payload capacity of our truck. We increased it by about 10%. So it means we took weight off the truck so you could put more payload on in the trailer. And we also improved the fuel economy in miles per gallon.
That is very impressive. In the rule of technology, having a new technology displace an old one, you need a 50%, you know, faster, better, safer, cheaper. Getting to 88% is just phenomenal. And what's more important is that this was actually a partnership with the Department of Energy and Volvo. So how did that work? Because usually, the private sector or the government takes the lead. As this is a public-private partnership, talk a little bit about the effectiveness of that.
We loved it. It was a great partnership from the start. It was a five-year partnership. The Super Truck program lasted 5 years. What the support from the Department of Energy gave us was the ability to explore more technology simultaneously. We were able to work as much on the engine as we did on the rest of the truck. It gave us the ability to work with some of our industry partners, some of the universities as well that we partnered with. It gave us a chance to go after concepts that are more high risk, high reward than we typically might be able to take on a project like this. And because it was a five-year program, it gave us a very good chance to maintain focus for 5 years. There was no slowing down. So our engineers could go a little bit further. They could take on a little bit more. So it was a tremendous catalyst to the amount of innovation that we were able to achieve in 5 years.
Tell us a little bit about the status of the project. Was this a demonstration project, a pilot project, or was this a project that developed a prototype truck that will now go into commercial production?
Okay, that is a very good question. Now, Super Truck is not a pre-production project. It is a demonstration project. It's something that gives us a chance to evaluate and demonstrate technologies. So it's a demonstration of technologies that are aimed at a 5 to 10 year horizon somewhere. So it's not intended to be industrialized as such. It's a platform for our engineers to do research and to really help quantify the potential benefit of any given technology and see which ones are ready to be industrialized so that our customers can see the benefits.
When are we going to start seeing some of these great improvements that you've made hit the road?
You actually are already seeing some of them on the road. Already last year, we launched aerodynamic enhancements to our current highway trucks that are directly derived from Supertruck. We identified some potential improvements back in 2012, early in the program, and we saw enough potential that we turned around and applied that to the current truck design. So we improved the bumper, the roof fairing, the chassis fairings on our highway trucks. Next year's, we'll be launching some improvements again from Supertruck onto our engines. So you will see some components and technologies there that are going to give direct fuel economy improvements already. And I think as you keep going forward in the next decade, the trucks will start looking a lot more like Supertrucks every year.
What's next for Volvo Trucks now that you've helped design and launch the Supertruck?
Well, we haven't stopped working. The truck is still on the roads every week. We are still doing a lot of testing. We found a lot of areas that we wanted to keep working on as we were building this truck. That was one of the fun takeaways from me, was to see that even after 5 years of exploring new technologies every day, we still have new ideas coming up every time we look at the truck. So we were recently awarded a Supertruck 2 contract with the Department of Energy. So that gives us another 5 years for engineers to continue chasing fuel savings and weight savings on our trucks.
Pascal, thanks for joining us on GreenSense. Congratulations on your award and keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That's Pascal Amar, Volvo Group Senior Project Manager, telling us about Volvo's Supertruck. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of GreenSense. We'll be back next week with more guests. Bob, who have you found out there?
Ooh, we got somebody that we've been working on for a while. I know this is going to excite you. Rod Roddenberry, as in son of Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry.
I remember as a kid watching the first Star Trek on an old black and white TV. I'm really excited. I can't wait to talk with him.
Well, Rod's involved in this upcoming Star Trek series that's coming to TV next year, but he's also in charge of the Roddenberry Foundation, which funds a lot of really amazing, innovative projects, many of them sustainable. So we'll get to meet Rod.
And also, if you have any suggestions, send me an email at robert@greensenseshow.com. We hope our guests inspired you to action. Now, it's your time. Get up, do your part, no matter how little or small, because little actions multiplied by millions of people yield great big results. So stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.